The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Timothy Harvey, and I am sitting across from Mr. Jason Hunt.
Also known as Froggy.
Yeah. He's a little bit...
Yeah,
I've been stuff in his head,
coughing and sneezing so much I've pulled muscles. It's just
welcome to winter.
Yeah,
it's finally actually starting to feel like winter here.
It is. Yes, we've finally gotten into the 30s and seem to be set to stay there for a while.
And they're talking snow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, Christmas is upon us. Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. Whatever.
Your winter holiday of your religious choice.
Or not. Yeah. You know, if you're not religious, just have a nice day. But we thought this has kind of sneaked up on us. We probably should have done this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we should.
To do, it's been suggested from a couple of listeners that we should do a gift guide, a little holiday gift thing that you could, you know, buy some stuff for people. So we'll do at least the first half. Talking about some different things that we could give to people, and none of them have the Sci-Fi for Me logo on them yet. Unfortunately, I don't know how many people would want that as a gift right now, though, because our audience is not that big yet. Yes, we have ambitions and schemes and plans running amok here.
Wahaha.
Yeah. So anyway, a gift guide. Things to give, and given that this is going to drop on our website a week before Christmas, these are going to be last minute gifts. And as we've said before, our friends over at SuperheroStuff.com have had things on sale all month. Mm-hmm. And Micah has sent me a note. Excuse me. He has pointed out his personal favorites, a couple of different ones. The Batman knit cuff beanie, which is a Batman hat, you know, little beanie hat, you know, stocking ski cap type hat. It's 100% acrylic. So I guess if you're allergic to cotton, then you should be fine. And then he also points out the Doctor Who pattern boxer shorts. And this is a set of boxer shorts that has a number of, it's got a row of TARDISes and Daleks and snowflakes and sonic screwdrivers all over it. So
I have to admit, I like this better than the Matt Smith boxer shorts, which are just
a little strange. Not going to do the Matt Smith boxer shorts. Although the fourth Doctor scarf socks, the thigh high socks for women. That's a rather interesting thing too. So. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff. We do encourage you whenever we can to go over to superherostuff.com and check out the different things they've got. They have an actual a tab called the Holiday Gift Guide where you can actually click on the things that they've got on sale. 13% off orders of $35 or more for the holidays. The code that they're using is HOLIDAY13. So we should be good there. We're covered. We've mentioned our sponsor, and we've pointed out the things that they're recommending, and here's the holiday code, and now we can talk about some other things that you might not find on Superhero Stuff. They don't sell video games.
No, they don't.
So let's start there, because there's a couple of DLCs and some updates and some new versions of different things. This is over at GameSpot.com. Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
Always a popular series.
Yeah. Sleeping Dogs.
What's that?
I have no idea. but these are some different things that are coming out on new platforms. So PS4, PS3, PS Vita. Some different deals that are out there on PlayStation, but you've got some Xbox games and some different things that are on sale. But excuse me, a number of titles that are on sale over at PlayStation: Styx, Master of Shadows, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Danger of the Ooze, Always a fun one around holiday time. The Last Tinker, City of Colors, Transformers, Rise of the Dark Spark Gold Edition. So, Worms Battlegrounds. No idea what that is. And I feel kind of disingenuous, you know, rattling off all these video game titles because I have no idea what they are because I don't play video games.
No, yeah. I don't either. I have a few at home that have. Well, I used to have one of the little console things. I used to have a little GameCube thing back in the day to play Resident Evil on. On my laptop, I've just got a couple. I've got the discs at home. There's nothing loaded on the laptop in terms of games, but. I'm often just go and look at the magazines there for, you know, the gaming stuff because it's the level of artistry involved for just the look of the games is always just really impressive now.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's some of them that are quite beautiful. And I've been wanting to play Alien Isolation.
We had Kat Spiller was playing that, and she was going to do a review, and then somehow, for some reason, didn't. But she was talking some good stuff about that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, they seem to have gotten the Alien game right after many, many missed opportunities.
Right.
Colonial Marines was just a...
It's a hot mess.
Oh, yeah. But this, yeah. But Isolation's got a lot of positive buzz, and I've been very, very impressed with everything I've read about it, so... If I were to sit there and find the necessary time, which I do not have.
Wait, time? What is that?
It's an illusion, lunchtime doubly, so.
But I'm looking here, last-minute gift ideas from Boing Boing.
Mm-hmm.
These are rather some interesting things. Oh, yeah. Now, not all of them are genre-specific, of course. But there is one here, Glorkian Warrior. It is a kid's graphic novel from James Kochalka. Corey over at Boing Boing says his six-year-old literally howled with laughter as he read this to her at bedtime, kicked her legs in the air, thumped the pillow, tears of laughter rolled down her cheeks. So I'm not sure what it is, but... It is called The Glorkian Warrior by James Kochalka.
Hmm.
The Best American Comics 2014, edited by Scott McCloud.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about some of the different titles that have come out this year. Here's one. The Omega J8004 Masticating Juicer.
Well, I like the name.
I tell you. This is, something. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it looks, you remember those old opaque projectors back in junior high school, you had the big giant, you know, kind of a turtle looking thing with the big lens sticking out of the front of it.
Sure, of course.
That's what this thing looks like with a little scoop on the top of it. So, Zini. Uses this to make green juice every day as part of a plant-centric health-promoting diet. So yes, the Omega J8004 Masticating Juicer. Here's one. This is from a company called Renova. This is black toilet paper. I kid you not. It is black toilet paper. It is a luxury tissue, how it's described here.
I would hope so.
Six roll standard pack. Would you pay $25 for a six pack of toilet paper?
There are several things I could say to respond to that. Very few of them actually are things I want to say.
Black
recording.
Toilet paper. You know, it takes all kinds, right?
Sure.
Here's one. Now, this is going to be, you know, this is one that those of you who are genre fans will appreciate, especially because we've talked about this before. This is a book called The Art of Omni.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you remember the old Omni magazine, not Omni Reboot that's online now, but this one's called The Mind's Eye, The Art of Omni. It is hardcover. It's edited by Jeremy Frommer and Rick Schwartz, and an introduction by Ben Bova, who was part of the original Omni magazine. And this is a collection of the artwork that graced the covers of Omni magazine for so many years. And it that and some of that stuff was just phenomenal, gorgeous stuff. And that that looks like it's a really good thing to pick up, just simply because it's you know, it's art. It's not just the fact that it's part of, you know, Omni magazine's part of genre history, but it's really, really, really fun stuff. An Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth. What Going to Space Taught Me About Ingenuity, Determination, and Being Prepared for Anything. This is by Colonel Chris Hadfield.
Right.
The singing astronaut.
Who interviews extremely well. If you ever had a chance to hear him discuss...
I would love to interview him.
Oh, that'd be
that would be fun.
I'd love to have him on the show.
Molecules, the Elements and the Architecture of Everything by Theodore Gray. It's got a lot of photography, molecular photography. Probably, I would imagine it's probably using a lot of the electron microscope type of technology for images. Mm-hmm. And it's got some really cool stuff in here. Just looking at the building blocks, and it's kind of it's kind of for, you know, younger ages, but that looks interesting as well. We're just kind of randomly picking various different things here. So, what are you finding over there?
Well, I've been kind of poking around because, of course, the season 8 Doctor Who DVD is, I believe, going to be available for Christmas. I'd have to look here, but so I went over to a website of some size, who is not a sponsor of the show, therefore they don't get. They don't get a name plug. But with a with a little bit of hunting, I'm sure you could find it. Over at Forbidden Planet, which is the big British science fiction stuff,
right,
for online. There's a Dalek Risk game.
Oh,
and I am not seeing it over on Amazon. Although I am seeing the Doctor Who Monopoly, which I have zero interest in playing because I don't like.
I haven't seen the Doctor Who Monopoly. I've heard about the.
It is the 50th edition, collector's edition, and apparently it is in stock. Just so you know, and it's. I mean, it's kind of a cool looking thing. You know, for those of you who are fans of the show and want and like Monopoly, I don't particularly enjoy playing Monopoly. So, it's a pretty cool thing. The artwork's pretty cool. But yeah, I really want the Dalek Risk, and as far it may be, all I can find is British.
Maybe that's something we have to import.
Probably. So I don't think you're going to be able to get it by Christmas. However,
when we get an office, there's going to be all sorts of games over on a shelf somewhere.
Right.
Of all of this different stuff, because we've got red shirts already, and of course you have to have chess. But I think we've got three dimensional chess. But I think we can add to that that game pile with stuff like this. I think that would be fun. The new annotated H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, wow.
A new collection.
Who's doing the annotations?
Les Klinger has edited. And it's there's an introduction by Alan Moore.
The Risk Doctor Who is actually something you can buy.
Yeah?
Here. Good night.
Is it as expensive as the Masticating Juicer?
I don't know. I've got two different prices here, one of which is almost $72.
Oh, wow.
Clearly that is not correct, because I've got another one that says...
That may be the overseas price.
$39, which is still a little pricey, but you know what? Some of that gaming stuff is actually pretty... It's not cheap anymore.
No, it's not.
But I think that for those of you who are fans of such things like I am, I think it could be kind of a lot of fun.
Here's one that's out today. It's on Blu-ray. Cowboy Bebop.
Oh yeah,
the complete series.
Oh nice.
Is out on Blu-ray and DVD now.
What does that run?
Let me look here. It doesn't say. Mm. But it's out. It's out brand new. Let's see if clicking the link shows anything here. I also ran across the complete Zap Comics boxed set.
Mm-hmm.
So R. Crumb, Robert Williams, S. Clay Wilson, Gilbert Shelton. That's one if you're into obscure art. In Real Life by Cory Doctorow. Let's see. The Twin Peaks box set is out.
Oh, nice.
The whole
if you want to get me that for Christmas, I'll let you. Just saying. Especially considering that, I mean, that's a great gift for a fan who doesn't have it. Is that the Blu-ray?
Let me look here. It doesn't say.
I would imagine so. With the show coming back.
Yeah, I would imagine there's a lot of people that are going to pick that up just to see what
really
it is.
Nice to have.
Speaking also of Blu-ray and DVD collections, the Batman 66 collection.
Right.
Now, we got one of those here, and we're going through it, and the 12-year-old and I were watching all of the old Batman episodes and all of this and going through all this stuff. And I'm going to write a review, and this was right before we switched the website. So my review is still sitting in draft mode just because it transferred over. But one of the things that I'm disappointed about with this collection is how so heavily focused it is on Adam West. All of the extras that are in here, all the behind the scenes and the history story, it's all Adam West. Adam West, Adam West. And I was like, well, where's the profile on Burt Ward?
Right.
Where's the special on all the villains?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing. There's none of that. There's two Adam West focused pieces.
Right.
And then there's another piece that's on guys who collect the memorabilia. And that's it.
There's no Eartha Kitt.
No. No. Nothing about the villain. There is no special at all about the villains, which I was very disappointed about.
That's too bad.
Yeah, because that's history.
Now, is that the DVD or the Blu-ray? Because, you know,
it's both. The Blu-ray DVD is all together in a box set.
Okay, because I was going to say, we still see that where you've got the DVD comes out and you've got these extras and the Blu-rays are out and it's got, like, you know.
This is the big box set numbered, which really surprised me when that showed up on the doorstep. I'm like, what is this? I didn't order anything. It's just a really big box from Warner Home Video.
Right.
Thinking, what is this? I didn't ask for anything. It's and then I opened Christmas. It up. It was like Christmas. I was like, oh, this is so cool. And then I sat there and I went, it's mint in the box. And it's numbered. Then I saw it was numbered. And I'm like, oh, crap. It's mint in the box and it's numbered. I can't open it, but I got to review it. I have to open it to review it, but I don't want to open it because it's mint in the box and it's numbered. I hated opening it, but it was fun. It's fun to open.
But you know what? Here's the thing. You know, we've seen this before. We saw this with the comic book world, and of course, it went completely insane in the comic book world where everything's it's the collector's edition. There's the 1,200 lenticular covers and
oh yeah,
yeah, go god, the well, 90s.
Did you see what Star Wars 1 is going to have 100 variant covers in January? What? They're expecting to sell a million copies.
Oh yeah, I know.
And I have no doubt that they're going to do it.
Oh, I'm sure they will. But I think that you, there are obviously for the collector, you know, by all means, you know, don't open your thing, whatever it is, whether it's the action figure or the comic book or the, you know, the box set or whatever it is. But the reality is that for so many real science fiction fans, the joy of sitting there and watching something or playing with the action figure or having those, you know, that do you what it's there for.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I've got somewhere in all of this, I've got the action figures based on Ralph McQuarrie's
right.
original R2 and 3PO artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And those are staying in the box.
Yeah. Well,
you tell the kid, don't touch those. Those are not yours. Those are mine. They stay in the box.
And yet, strangely, the Rick Grimes bobblehead is still in the box.
Well, yeah, it's waiting. It's waiting for when we unpack at the office, where everybody can enjoy it, and you know, we get a couple of the others, you know, for a matching set.
Right.
Yeah.
Folks, it's okay to open up your toy and play with it, and, yes. and read your comic book, and watch your Batman 66.
William Shakespeare's Star Wars trilogy, the Royal Imperial boxed set. Now, I've got two of these. I haven't got Jedi yet, but these are fun.
Oh yeah,
these are really fun. I'm like, oh yeah, these this is Star Wars in iambic pentameter.
Oh yeah, and frankly, for your Star Wars fan or just your science fiction fan in general, that's a great gift.
Yeah. Oh, here's one you might like. $10. It's mm-hmm. a piece of software mm-hmm. called Amiga Forever.
Oh my God.
It makes your computer emulate the Commodore Amiga.
Oh my God.
How is that? How is that for retro?
I mean, it stops, basically it hits what, like, you know, a megabyte and stops working because it's full?
Yeah, something like that. Isn't that cool?
That's cool.
Now, we did talk about this on Level 117 a few weeks ago when they did the 75th special, the mm-hmm. 75th anniversary, from the golden age to the silver screen, you know, pop to pulp.
Right.
The book is out as well. It's called 75 Years of Marvel Comics from the Golden Age to the Silver Screen, and it's a hardcover history of the House of Ideas. Mm-hmm. It's the big thing, you know, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, all of the different characters and stuff that they've come up with over the years. So that's out. Bacon Soap. Now, I'm still going off of the Boing Boing list. Some of this stuff is pretty fun. Just, but yeah, bacon scented soap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also out on DVD, Blu-ray, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is the movie.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Maze Runner.
Sure. Which I have not seen.
Which is, I haven't seen that yet. Batman the Complete Series. Okay, that's the 66 one. Lord of Illusions, which is one of Clive Barker's
right
stories. That's
actually one of the. It actually did okay, I guess. It wasn't a particularly huge success, but it was actually a really, really good combination of horror and film noir.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend that film. Even if you're not a big fan of the sort of extreme horror that Barker has been known to do.
Yeah.
It's actually just, you know, now it actually seems kind of tame. It's not part of the torture porn school of filmmaking.
No, Saw.
Yeah, but
no,
I mean, it's actually really good. And it's Scott Bakula.
Is he in that, really?
He's the lead. He's
Harry DeMore.
And it's, it was going to be the first of a series of films where he played that character, the mm-hmm. supernatural private eye.
Right.
And unfortunately, it didn't quite work. And I'm willing to bet that's the director's cut.
Could be.
So the director's cut is, and I can highly recommend, I've seen the director's cut. I can highly recommend it. So that's a definitely cool gift to pick up for your horror fan, your film noir fan.
This is the collector's edition.
Mm-hmm.
Famke Janssen's first big screen appearance.
Yep, it was.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic cast.
Yeah. Here's one. If you've got $110 to spare,
mm-hmm.
Bandai has a 7-inch tall
mm-hmm.
Samurai Stormtrooper mashup figure.
That.
This looks really
it
cool.
Does. It's a really neat design.
It is. He's got a katana and a flintlock as his weapons.
Sure.
It really does look pretty cool. The sculpt is there, and it has the Batman chest.
Oh, of course.
There are nipples.
Of course, there is.
Yeah.
You saw Michael Keaton's two word response.
Yeah,
to the
I'm Batman. I'm fine with that. Yeah. Here's She-Ra. You remember She-Ra?
Sure.
You know,
of course.
There's a new bust that's out. She's it's sitting atop a bunch of red crystals type mm-hmm. things. 9-inch bust. Oh, I didn't know she's He-Man's sister.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
We should have asked Dustin. Dustin could have heard all about that.
Maybe he can do a rewatch for us.
There we go. You know, if you have $150.
Yes.
Have you seen the Star Trek original series Phaser Universal Remote Control? Oh, it's nice.
Oh, I think I did see somebody mention that, but I don't know if I've seen the whole thing.
It looks just like it. It is the original series. It is that great, just really elegant, clean design.
And it's the original series phaser? This it's not the movie phaser?
No, this is, well, or not any of the movie phasers. This is the original TV show.
Yeah.
And it has, it looks like the little handheld unit pops out the back.
Oh, right.
So you can hold it on its own.
That would be the Type 1 phaser.
That's right.
See, we have to establish our bona fides here.
But it is a fully functioning gesture-based universal remote control.
Gesture-based.
Well, yeah, you point it.
Yeah.
I believe that's the official.
Well, now see, these days though, gesture-based takes on a whole new meaning because you've got the Wii and you've got all these things where you've got this little, the little sensor strip that looks at you moving.
Right.
To do, so I could wave my hand to change the channel, and I could wave my other hand to change the volume, and I could spread my fingers like this and do this kind of thing to zoom in on a picture or whatever. It's crazy, some of this stuff, how interactive it can be. Of course, the TV has to be watching you.
Well, of course.
That still creeps me out.
The design was based on the first ever 3D laser scans of the last known screen-used prop.
Oh, wow.
So it is,
It's accurate.
It's like to accurate. The nth. So it's the size, degree. It's everything. It's, 10 authentic phaser firing zones, including phaser overload.
Ah.
Silent mode, of course.
Sure.
Very useful. Multicolored flashing emitter with tactile forced feedback vibration motor.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, wow, this is cool. Here we go. Advanced gesture recognition technology. There's this explanation.
That's what it is.
Okay, 9 gestures multiplied by 3 memory banks means that up to 36 remote control codes, 36 remote control codes can be stored. Wow.
Mm.
So yeah. Anyway, so that's wow. I would love to have that.
And that's
$150.
I wonder if that's got something that you have to have a specific type of TV in order to use it.
Well, but you know what? I think,
or if you've got to have if you've got to have some sort of an interface that you plug into your TV, if the TV has to have like an HDMI port.
No, I think for a lot of the universal remote controls, my TV is not new by any stretch of the imagination. It's probably 10, 15 years old. and trust me, when we moved, me the last time, several of my friends pointed out the fact that it weighs about a bazillion pounds.
I had one of those up until the point that it died. My kid was like, can we get a flat screen? I was like, no, there's one. This works.
That's right.
It's perfectly fine. I'm not going to replace it until it dies. And
on the other hand, if I'm ever like invaded by a small army, I just have to tip the thing off the balcony and I'll kill them all.
Exactly.
A universal remote works on it just fine.
Yeah.
So I think for a lot of these things, most of the technology for universal remotes has been around for a long, long time. If your television or whatever has a was able to use a remote, then I mean clearly if you can put in 36
gestures, that's a lot.
Well, 36 remote control codes. I mean, yeah, wow. So
the Cowboy Bebop is $42 on Amazon, by the way. And oddly enough, but not really, on that list, other items, people who bought this also bought this. On that list, Steins Gate, which is still sitting right there on the table, and
we have to watch that.
You were helping people move, so we've been tied up, and I've been sick.
Yes,
so.
Yes, we have.
Hot Toys has the new Age of Ultron Iron Man figure, the Mark 43 Iron Man. Including a battle-damaged helmet and a detachable damaged Ultron Mark I. Special edition collection of stuff.
So the action figure is essentially way, way, way out ahead of the film.
Yeah. Well, we've gotten photographs of some of the new Lego kits.
right.
as well. Mm-hmm. And some speculation that Tony Stark might not be inside the Hulkbuster armor based on one kit that people have seen.
I'd heard about that.
So that'll be interesting. Did you see the New 52, the DC Comics variants, the movie poster variant covers?
Yeah.
I like the Catwoman one.
I thought Bullet. All of them were really, the Green Lantern one actually looks really, really good too.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. You know, Justice League, not so much.
They have tripped up a few times on their cover variant stuff, mm-hmm. but this actually was pretty neat.
Yeah. Posable animated Batman figures.
Oh,
A new set is out. One of the things that bugged me about action figures when we were kids, the Star Wars figures especially, was the fact that they weren't articulated.
But you know
could
what?
Not bend the arms or the legs, and it was annoying because you were kind of limited in what you could do with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, but you remember, it was all, again, we're also talking a very, very different time for this sort of thing. Because, I mean...
That's true.
You know, the 3 3/4, was that the height? Was that the size?
I'd have to get one out and measure it. But yeah, roughly.
Yeah, like that.
4 inch.
Yeah, you know, all that stuff was, you know, you look at some of those original Star Wars figures that we played with until the paint wore off. You know, and we didn't care. You know, remember the ridiculous lightsaber up the arm thing?
Oh yeah.
Okay. It's just that's just a ridiculous.
It was actually a pretty cool design because it lets you do the the blade coming out of the emitter.
Yeah, they bent and they broke and all that stuff. I mean, admittedly, you know, the goal was to not lose the part. You know, you lost all the guns, you know, within like a week.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, you look at and the
I still have a few of mine.
And the sculpts were terrible.
Oh yeah, I mean, especially the first Han Solo.
Oh wow!
Oh, the first Han Solo was
giant
terrible.
Head and it didn't look at. Yeah.
yeah,
but you look at some of the other toys of the time period. You look at your G.I. Joes, and they had all that articulation, but they were also much, much larger. So you didn't have this kind of.
Well, the second wave of G.I. Joes, not the 12-inch, the dolls that came out in the 60s, but the ones that came out in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Those were articulated, and they were the little 6-inch.
Well, but the stuff was, you know, we started getting the articulated smaller figures as time went by. But
right.
remember that, you know, Star Wars in many ways, you know, tread new ground for those kind of things anyway.
True.
So I mean, we didn't even have that. You know, you basically had your G.I. Joe, you had your Johnny West, you had your Barbies, you had, you know, for your 12-inch mm-hmm. figures. And, you know, Barbie was wasn't articulated, but it was hugely popular. So,
well, she did have joints you could bend.
Oh, yeah, it does not have
excuse me, in the
but
legs.
She also had the tiny, tiny feet.
Yes. yes.
So, I mean, a lot of this stuff was, still, again, Star Wars changed everything.
Yes.
So now, of course, we have these action figures that are, you know, 24 feet tall and every single, you know, centimeter bends. I mean, there's amazing stuff that you can do with some of these toys.
Oh, the Black Widow one.
Oh yeah.
From is it Hot Toys that's got that one?
I think it's Hot Toys.
It is just remarkable, the likeness. You know, and they got a really good one of Captain America as well.
They've got a new 1/6 Peter Capaldi Doctor Who.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
Doing the first pose that we ever saw him doing.
And it's so much better than the first run of because they just didn't look right. But.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. And let you hear from our sponsor. We've already talked about them having a sale the month of December, superherostuff.com. They are where you can find a number of licensed merchandise stuff, T-shirts and backpacks and hoodies and socks and scarves and hats and T-shirts and jackets and such. So keychains, magnets, not just clothing items, but we will let you hear from them, and we will be back with the second half of H2O right after this. Stand by.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Oh, this is so cool!
That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from superherostuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to superherostuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at superherostuff.com.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker here, inviting you to join me and the rest of the Sci-Fi for Me crew every week as we dive into the details of the TV shows that you and we love. Did you miss your favorite show this week? Or perhaps you need someone to talk to about that latest plot twist and the implications. Well, maybe your friends don't geek out over shows like Supernatural, Grimm, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like what your friends over at Sci-Fi for Me do, but hey, it's what we live for. So join us for the latest at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Our transmitters are made from hand wavium. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
That Rick Grimes bobblehead is mint in the box.
Yes.
As long as it stays in the box.
That's true.
Back on H2O, Jason Hutt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And I'm going to make a recommendation that if I can breathe enough to get it out. You remember the Flash Arrow crossover here not too long ago with Roy G. Bibolo as the villain on the Flash episode?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was able to set my 12-year-old down and put in front of him Flash number 286 from June of 1980.
Wow.
This issue introduces, in a one-shot, the Rainbow Raider.
Wow.
Who is the Rainbow Raider? And can the Crimson Comet discover his grim secret before he becomes its next victim? Wahaha. I remember that I had it. Dick Giordano did the artwork on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had to dig through four totes to find it. Mm. But I remembered I had it. And my kid just dove into it, just read the whole thing, And for those of you who have any friends or family who are comic book aficionados, you can always go through the backlog at your local comic shop.
Oh, yeah.
And you can find all sorts of things that are there in the back issues, and you know, round out your collection and fill in the gaps of the titles that you have that maybe you don't have all of them.
Well, I tell you what, your comic book, your local comic book shop is going to love it if you go through their back issues.
Oh yeah,
and pick up some of that stuff. And there's some real great. I mean, there's some fantastic series that have been, you know, that are long since gone. And you keep hearing about some of them coming back in whatever new media kind of format. I mean,
well, and with this being the 30th anniversary of Crisis on Infinite Earths,
mm-hmm.
It would not be a bad idea to see if you could find some copy of that.
Oh, where, sure. I mean,
did they ever collect that into a one shot, into a graphic novel version?
Yeah, I want to say they did. I want to say it was actually one of the really higher end slipcase kind of.
Yeah,
deals with some really nice, you know, really nice extras in it, which is interesting calling things extras for a comic book. It's like, well, no, we just include the sketches and things like that. These are extras.
I've seen some people saying, when is Multiversity going to be done so we can stop hearing how great a writer Grant Morrison is?
Well, let's see. About the time when he's coming up with the next series that he's basically doing, because... This is what Grant Morrison does. He comes up with an interesting idea to tell a story, and then people sit there and who love it.
They love it.
They hate it.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of middle ground with Morrison.
I'm kind of indifferent. It's okay. He's a decent writer. I'm not blown away by anything that he's done, but that's just me.
Well, I think what's interesting about him is that he's one of those writers who is not afraid to take an idea and just run with it.
Yeah.
And luckily, for whatever reasons, DC a lot of times will let him run. And that's good and bad. But at the same time, they let him run, which is great from a creator standpoint. And if you like his stuff, then you get a chance to play and you dive into his, you know.
Of course, if you're George Perez, not so much.
Well, yeah.
Speaking of, at some point in the future, we will be talking about George Perez and Pat Broderick and cosplay and Comic Cons and all that other stuff. I think we're planning on doing that as an episode of the Echo Chamber, so we can get a number of opinions. I know Marie Lim and Jen Wise and that side of our group have some opinions on that.
Oh sure,
But I'm going to make a recommendation here also for a nonfiction book. And I just posted a review of this here not too long ago on our site. Mm-hmm. It is Amy Pascal's biography of Joss Whedon.
Right.
Very interesting, especially if you're into the filmmaking process, mm-hmm. the act of actually creating television or movies in any way, shape, or form. Whether you're somebody who wants to get into that and actually do that, whether it's a hobby or something you want to do as a profession, or if it's something you're just interested, you just like to know the inside baseball stuff.
Right.
It really is interesting. I did not know that Whedon's dad wrote television comedy. Right. And Whedon wrote for Roseanne Barr, for the Roseanne show.
Did he really?
Where he got started. Huh. And learned very quickly what it was like to be rewritten.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's an interesting book. And we've got a number of books over on the review pile that we've got to go through and get stuff caught up.
Yeah.
My goal for the year, for 2015...
Say, your goal for 2014.
No, my goal for 2014 is just to survive it. but for 2015, I want to get we're going to try to get more book reviews up every month, and we're going to bring Week in Review back mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form. We're going to try to get some of that put together as well, and we want to get you guys more involved, and our listeners, our readers, more involved as participants in the site, because Sci-Fi mm-hmm. for Me is for me being all of us, everybody. Right. So, did you find anything else? What have you got over there?
Oh, goodness. Well, I mentioned the Doctor Who DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And for season 8, this is Peter Capaldi's first season.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially...
could be his only season.
No. Could be Jenna Coleman's last season.
Yeah, I don't know.
The rumor mill
is,
you know, but we're also getting, you know, all sorts of vague non-denials and denials and confirmations and craziness. And
I had somebody post on Twitter last night
mm-hmm.
that he'd heard...
Mm-hmm.
that there was going to be a crossover later this year
mm-hmm.
between Doctor Who
mm-hmm.
and Arrow. And I thought to myself, what? And the only way I see anything like that happening at all involves Barrowman.
Well, think about it. On Arrow, you have two Doctor Who stars.
You do.
And... and it's not going to happen.
This source has had material for us before that's turned out to be rather accurate. But I just, you know, I don't see how you could do something like that unless it's going to be a gag.
Oh, well,
it could be some sort of a gag like sure. Castle did. You know, Castle did their science, you know, murder at the science right, fiction convention right. type of thing. I don't see that happening on Arrow. I could see it on Flash.
Well, but,
you know, the wink, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But I don't see a real serious crossover.
Who in the Arrow universe could Peter Capaldi play?
Well,
that would be awesome.
The way it was presented, it was a crossover between those two shows. I was like, you can't make that happen. Although it got me thinking, because we've just started doing recaps of The Librarians,
right?
And funnily enough, after the pilot, the first two episodes, the 2 hour mm-hmm. Ran on TNT, later on that week, it was on CW.
Mm, sure.
And those two they're not corporate, they're not owned by the same company. And I thought to myself, that's odd. But then it took me back to comments that Greg Berlanti, that Mark Pedowitz, the CW president, had said about the possibility not only of Arrow and Flash crossing over with Supergirl,
right.
which is CBS, CW, they sure. all own the same thing, but also crossing over into Titans on TNT.
Right.
And I thought, how are they going to do that? And then The Librarians show up on CW in a repeat. And I thought, somebody worked a deal.
Yeah.
There's a deal somewhere in place because TNT is Turner.
Mm-hmm.
and CBS CW is Time Warner, which is not Turner.
Well, that's true.
Well, because CW is CBS and Warner Brothers
right.
combined owning CW. And CBS is Viacom, isn't it?
I think so.
It used to be. But yeah, so that was interesting to see the librarians on CW. The Librarians, by the way, is a good show.
It's fun.
It's fun. Yeah. It's, you know, it's Indiana Jones meets Warehouse 13 meets Max Headroom kind of mentality. That idea, that just sense of just... Let's just roll with it. Just
it's
go.
It's got John Larroquette in it, and he's
very fun.
So nice to see him again.
He's and he's so droll in this.
And playing the character that he is always really, really good at playing, which is that sort of just snarky, sarcastic. But it's just so deadpan. It's not even like he's not trying to be snarky. He's just saying.
Yeah, he's just that's you know, just him. I would love to see him, that character Jenkins, as Malt. Just some reason why Jenkins would be dressed up as a Klingon, just for the wink. Because this last episode, they were talking about how, you know, how it's set in Boston.
Right.
And the Twitter feed just blew up over all of the leverage winks that were in that. Because it's Dean Devlin, and, you know, leverage was set in Boston. And now you've got Kane, what's his name? That was in Leverage is now in this
right,
show.
Right,
one of the
right,
guys,
right,
and so you know we've got you know all sorts of Leverage winks and stuff in the episode because it's in Boston.
Sure,
but it was fun to see. But I think that would be fun to have John Larroquette just for whatever the Halloween episode. Sure, let's have Jenkins as Malt.
Well, you know, I think that'd be such an inside joke for a huge chunk of the audience. I mean that's way inside baseball. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but a lot of people know what a Klingon is,
even
if they don't get the reference.
Oh, sure.
Just the second level reference. You know, it's like Birdman.
Right.
Birdman for just the general audience is a movie that works on a certain level, and excuse me, for everybody else that's a fan of the genre, especially the superhero movie genre, we sit there and we see Michael Keaton, who used to play Batman, and we see Edward Norton, who played the Incredible Hulk. And
yeah, but I tell you,
but there are so many things in that movie that go back to what we know about their history playing superhero characters, and it works on such a meta level for us who know all of that history that. Normally, it wouldn't be that there wouldn't be that much subtext for people who haven't been watching these films for all these years.
Yeah, but in all, you know, but think about it though. I mean, when it comes to Michael Keaton, everybody saw the Batman movie. Everybody in the world saw, you know, the first two Burton Batman films.
But seeing the Batman movie. And by the way, that's something we could recommend as well as something you could get people is because there's been a resurgence in interest in the Tim Burton films.
Oh, sure.
And did you see the interview where Burton says, it's time for a happy superhero?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim
Burton said that.
I know. But I will say this, is the news about the Beetlejuice sequel keeps inching closer. And
keeps popping up.
With Winona Ryder. They want Winona Ryder in it.
Yeah?
That'll be fun. He said he wants to get as much as the original cast back together as he can.
I wonder if Gina Davis would do it.
You know what? I would like to think that she would. On the other hand, you know, Alec Baldwin has burned a lot of bridges. So.
Yeah. Speaking of Gina Davis, I was flipping channels the other night. I think we're now into our random topic discussions. I was flipping channels and I saw my brain saw Cutthroat Island.
Right.
And it actually was Cutthroat Kitchen. I was like, oh, man.
I saw that.
Because I haven't seen Cutthroat Island in a while. And that's a fun movie. It's not
but it did so
super
poorly.
Smart.
It did so poorly.
You know, I want to think that it did badly because of a reason. Was there something else that was out at the same time that just killed it at the box office?
You know what? I don't really remember. I seem to recall it not being a good... Pirates of the Caribbean shouldn't have been a success.
No.
Right? You know, I mean, for a lot of different reasons. First of all, the pirate movies had just kind of bombed, and I think in many ways, Cutthroat Island was one of the. It was like the, you know,
just one of the last ones before that.
It was kind of the nail in the coffin.
Yeah,
and it was also a female lead movie, you know, female action hero kind of lead movie.
Yeah. But she did really, really well in that.
Well, I thought she did fine. Was it A Kiss Before Dying? Was the one she did with Sam Jackson? I think that's what it was.
Was she in that?
I think that's what it was. I'll have to look that up real quick. And because I really like that movie.
Yeah. But yeah, I saw, I'm just flipping. I was like, ooh, Cutthroat Island. No, unfortunately not. Princess Bride is always a good gift to give. If you don't have that in your collection already, you should. What else have I got upstairs? Oh, the Last Starfighter. I saw The Legend of Korra Book 3 is out on Blu-ray and DVD now.
Mm-hmm.
That's out in stores. I saw that the other day. Of course, Guardians of the Galaxy is out currently. And what else? Oh, the new Godzilla.
Right. And you heard that the
Toho's making a new one.
They're making
They're going to make a Japanese one.
A Long Kiss Goodnight.
Ah,
Kiss Before
yes.
Dying is a 1956 movie. It's a different movie. Long Kiss Goodnight. Lots of fun. I think that was one that sort of slipped under the radar for a lot of people.
Speaking of that, another movie that's out now on home video that kind of didn't really play very long in the box office was Sin City 2.
Right.
Dame to Kill For. I mean, it was like it was there and it was gone. It just suddenly it popped up and it blipped and it disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I recall, the reviews were all pretty much, I mean, it was fine. Mm-hmm. It was like there wasn't, but that was kind of it. It was kind of like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't have...
Nothing spectacular.
Well, and,
it's mind-blowing. It'll change how you look at movies forever.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you look at the first Sin City and you look at the first 300.
Yeah.
Okay? And they're very stylized and they're very, you know, they're kind of designed to be, to evoke the comic book.
Right.
Right? Which is cool, you know, and it's great that you actually had, for whatever reason, whatever you think of those particular filmmakers... The fact that they were able to do that, and they were sit there and go, okay, we're going to do it like the comic book. We're going to try and reproduce the page.
Yeah.
Right?
Which they tried to do in the first, in Ang Lee's Hulk.
Right.
And it didn't quite work
well. And then you look at something like The Spirit, okay, which also tried to do something along those lines.
Yeah.
And in many ways was a misfire.
And I think a lot of that had to do with the script
script. It's not a good script. It's not a bad cast.
It's prime for a reboot.
Oh yeah, just don't let Frank Miller do it.
Wow.
I mean, Miller has turned into such a parody of himself, which is just unfortunate. But
although you've got The Dark Knight 3 is coming from him and Scott Snyder. And Greg Capullo and
right.
some of the other guys who are actually working on the Batman books now.
Right.
I don't know if Brian Azzarello is part of that set or not, but apparently there's going to be a Dark Knight 3 that's a sequel. Carrie Kelly is older and apparently is at a point in her life where she's having to make a decision whether she's going to be a superhero or a terrorist. I think is what I read in the liner notes on that. That should be interesting.
Well, you know,
Bruce Wayne's probably dead.
It kind of continues to explore the I don't know. I have mixed feelings about that because I thought Dark Knight 2 was really pretty awful.
Yeah.
He exploring the social ramifications of being a superhero, and on a larger society for good or for ill. You know,
as far as like being a vigilante.
Yeah, so I think there was some interesting stuff there. I just didn't necessarily care for the execution, especially the first one. Definitely was extremely well done, but the second one just felt odd.
Do you think the second one was there to fill out a contract obligation, maybe, or
no.
It's just he just did something and it just didn't work?
No, I think he's very political in his way, and he's kind of. He has whether you agree with it or not, he has an agenda that he is not afraid to discuss, and it has not exactly helped him with his audience, I think. Because remember, the Batman Holy Terror.
Right.
Okay.
Which ended up not being a Batman.
Right, because
Of the politics in it.
Well, because everybody sat there, everybody sat there and went, whoa, hang on. This is not necessarily an appropriate story for Batman.
Right.
You can go tell your story if you want to tell your story, but DC was like, we don't really want Batman to be in this. And you and I have talked a couple of times before, but not so much lately because we haven't seen much of it, when our comic book heroes get involved in real world politics, things get messy. And I mean, there's something to be said for telling those kinds of stories. Superman, truth, justice in the American way, right? There's potential.
Except that's not politically correct anymore.
Well, but I mean, there's potential there for good or for ill, for telling interesting stories there. You get Batman into, and for those who don't know, basically, Batman Holy Terror was supposed to be Batman fighting Al Qaeda, essentially,
right?
Which it would not be the first time that you've had Batman face off against terrorists, right?
Right.
But when you dive into the real life politics of that, it's one thing in the 1940s to have Captain America punch Hitler.
Yeah.
Okay. It was a different time. Propaganda films. You're in wartime, and I'm not, war was a very different thing then too.
Well, plus it's easy for a number of people to accept Hitler as a bad guy.
Well, it's because Hitler was a bad guy.
He was a bad guy.
He was a bad guy. But you were.
And I think really now, not to put too fine a point on it. Al Qaeda is a group of bad guys. I mean, we can easily say that.
I think that unfortunately, you could, but.
But you do have people that apologize for him.
Well,
and you didn't have that so much in World War II.
Well, unfortunately, and World War II is not as clean and neat and tidy as
the history books say.
Right. I mean, you dive into it. You can sit there and look into that World War I and the various things that the Allies in World War I caused. This is the restrictions we're placing on Germany. Had some of the seeds to Hitler's rise to power.
Right.
Same thing with Al Qaeda. The fight, the Cold War, the proxy fight between the Americans and the Russians.
Right.
Planted the seeds. Blah blah blah. Right. This is not the show we're doing. We're not a politics show.
No, we're not. No.
But
one thing leads to another, and that environment, that climate, was in ascension, I guess you could say, when Dark Knight 2 came about.
Right,
because you were right there in the middle of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Al Qaeda was just coming into the public perception as a real threat,
sure.
And Miller was that. I think that's where Miller started to get decidedly more political in what he was doing.
Yeah, I think
with
so.
Dark Knight too,
and I still I think
I mean with Holy Terror.
But you end up with this. You end up with this, and it becomes a question. I think he was able to self-publish Holy Terror, or whether I can't remember if he self-published or he did a different comic company. It doesn't matter.
Did Vertigo do it?
It wasn't Vertigo. No, DC was like, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to walk away from that. The press was going really bad on that one for him, and I think for a lot of people, I believe. And I actually looked at it. I can't remember. It was a collection. I think it was collected at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I looked at it and I went, Yogi, I don't think I need to read this because too far right, too far left. You end up with your storytelling just becomes bleh.
I mean,
it's I don't want that. I don't need that. To me, we've talked about again story, and when you push yourself into a narrow box, whether that's pick up. You're stuck in your political ideology to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Your story gets so restricted and so
Well, and you run the risk of getting preachy, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's,
whatever your viewpoint
it's
is.
It's very preachy. Now, you know, it's the great thing about comics, and especially for indie comics, you know, leave aside your DCs and your Marvels and your Dark Horse and those guys. You get into your little indie comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the great thing for readers is that it's all out there for you.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you want. And you don't have to read the stuff you don't want to read.
Yeah.
And so, but to get back to the original point, Sin City 301, you know, you get the second, you know, 300 Rise of an Empire, you get Sin City 2. The really exciting thing about those first two seem to have...
It's not a novelty anymore,
right? And I think it's
now a shtick.
You wouldn't necessarily think it would be a novelty, but it ended up almost having that feeling. It's like, oh, we've seen that before, you know. So,
yeah.
I really had no interest in seeing Rise of an Empire. It didn't particularly appeal.
Well, anything from Zack Snyder, I just don't have any interest in it at all.
We've started this before. I don't have a problem with Zack Snyder. I just didn't see the point.
Yeah.
Because it's not a sequel, it's not a prequel, it's not a sidequel, it's all three. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I actually wanted to see Sin City 2, and I just haven't, which tells you exactly...
Not a driving desire to see it. It just seems like that looks interesting, mm-hmm. but I'll get around to it.
Right. And I enjoyed the comics, and I enjoyed, I may not always agree with his politics, but Miller has a good sense of film noir.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the Sin City books. And I enjoyed the first film. And Robert Rodriguez is always an interesting director, and as an indie director, always nice to see him do something interesting and fun.
Right.
So.
What else could we recommend? Last minute gift. Now, Superhero Stuff says that they've also got last minute, they've got gift cards available.
Oh, yeah.
So you could always do that.
Well, there's so many things out there. This is, you know, we've talked about this before too. This is a great time for genre fans.
Yeah, it is.
You know, you've got it's we're in the mainstream now. You know, we're
that's not always a good thing, but
no, it has its risks. But at the same
for
time,
stuff for stuff, you know, yeah.
I mean, superherostuff.com has got all this great. They've just got a ton of neat things to get. But you go, you know. You can go find DVDs and Blu-rays of some fantastic films.
John Carter.
I had to pick up John Carter.
Go get John Carter. John Carter, Princess Bride, mm-hmm. The Last Starfighter.
Oh yeah.
There was another Night of the Comet.
Oh yeah.
The 25th anniversary of Night of the Comet mm-hmm. this year. So pick that one. That's a good one.
Ooh, here's something for you. A last minute idea. Genre Christmas movies.
Die Hard,
of course. Rare Exports. Go get Rare Exports. If you folks haven't seen Rare Exports, now I need to look it up. Rare Exports is the true story of Santa Claus.
No.
Santa Claus.
Uh-huh.
And it is...
If my internet's going to cooperate.
It's a, where is it?
While you're looking at that, I'm gonna recommend another one because it's now relevant again, is the 1990 version of the Flash series.
Oh, right.
Starring John Wesley Shipp because half the cast is back in the new Flash, which I think that I am so looking forward to Mark Hamill coming back as Trickster.
Oh, I know.
I want to see him and John Wesley Shipp in the cell together.
Right. Yes.
You know, that's what I want to see. And I want to see Amanda Pays, all three of them together on screen. They've got to have a scene together somehow. I don't know how they're going to do it, but
mm-hmm.
did you notice in the new version of Flash when Amanda Pays, they've got her on screen talking about Mercury Labs
mm-hmm.
and they got the new photo of her. They got a current photo of her, what she looks like now.
Right.
And behind that, back a little bit further in the files, is a photo of her from The Flash, 1990. It's on the display screen. It's her as Tina McGee in the original. And I thought, yeah, they're going to work something into that. That's so fun that they were able to do that. But yeah, Mark Hamill, I think he's going to be in episode 17. Or 14 or 17 when the show comes back.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Rare Exports is a Norway, Finland, France, and Sweden production. You can find the two short films that Rare Exports A Christmas, Rare Exports A Christmas Tale is the name of the feature. You can see the two, you can go to YouTube and find the two short films that inspired it. And,
you know what else is on YouTube?
Yeah.
Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Well, I know that's the other one I was going to mention.
Yeah.
But Roger Ebert called Rare Exports, a rather brilliant lump of coal for your stocking, an R-rated Santa Claus origin story crossed with The Thing. It is very funny, and it is played completely straight, and it is the dark Christmas film for those of you who think Christmas is just whatever.
Now you notice I have not decorated yet.
I know you.
I've been sick.
I know.
I'll offer that as my excuse. But
Rare Exports is very, very funny. I highly recommend it, and it's a film because it is a foreign film, but a lot of it is in English. It is a foreign film. A lot of American audiences haven't seen it, but it's available.
I've never heard of it.
It's available on DVD and Blu-ray. I highly recommend it. It is fun. The kid who's the lead, he's a really good child actor. Mm-hmm. He's adorable. But go to YouTube, watch the two short films, which are just hysterical. But yeah, highly recommend it.
Did you see, and I saw this on Instagram, and I can't remember where I saw it. Did you see that the latest... the Elf animated, the Landing, the new stuff that's out, the 3D, the CGI, what's it called? About the elves, dropping in and putting all, you know, the little gadgets and gizmos and the whole thing.
Now you broke my brain. Thanks.
I'm sorry, but in the new one, mm-hmm. apparently there are a bunch of kids waiting in line for Santa Claus, and Ralphie is in that list. Is in that line?
Well, of course he is.
Of course he is. What is that? Prep and Landing.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because sure. Dave Foley is one of the voices. Mm-hmm. I think they're up to three now. But yeah, the new one has the kid standing in line, and Ralphie is standing there, waiting for his chance to see Santa Claus. So there's a lot of stuff, like you said, you know, for genre people, this is a good time, you know, to stock up on all of your stuff because at some point the bottom's going to fall out, and you know we will be in our dark times again.
Many, many years from now, we hope.
Yes.
But yeah, this is a great for gifts for your science fiction, fantasy, you know, your genre fan.
And we haven't even talked about Hobbit stuff. I saw a Hobbit house for your cat.
Of course. If you dress up your cat like a Hobbit, you need help. Sorry.
I don't know that the cat would last that long.
Well, you know, some people have managed to do terrible things to their pets.
We do not.
No.
We respect our pets. We take care of our pets. Okay, that's going to do it for us. Hopefully that gives you some ideas of some last-minute things that you can do. As always, you know, we recommend you go over to thesuperherostuff.com first. Yep. And you can check out their specials and their sales and Christmas things that they've got going. And gift cards are always a good stocking stuffer.
Oh yeah.
And if you want to pick up some stuff and send it to us, that's fine too. We won't object. Nope. Coffee.
Oh yeah.
Coffee
always,
is
always win the
yeah.
coffee.
We still need to find a sponsor for coffee.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, we are going to take I think next week off.
It's the holidays.
Yeah, next week, I'll probably be
traveling too.
Yeah, so we'll take the rest of the year off. We'll take the next 2 weeks, and you know, have our holidays and our new year and recover and all of that, and then we will be back for another edition in 2015. This has been an interesting year.
It has been, and there's a lot of good things that have come into this year.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting to see what 2015 does for us.
We've had some real successes this year, and I think we should be very pleased with that. And I think that nothing else, you know, we've got a really great new website.
Yes, we do.
But we've had a lot of great response to a lot of the stuff that we've written and posted, and I think we have a lot to be proud of for the work that we've done and this team of people that you put together.
For the record, and it's just, and I'll probably write this up over on the website as well. But I do appreciate all of the effort that everybody makes as part of the Sci-Fi for Me team. Everybody that's here in Kansas City, and the folks in Dallas, and people in LA, mm-hmm. and Alex over in Krakow, Poland.
Yep.
And, you know, at some point, hopefully we'll get our New York team put back together and get some new people up there. But, yeah, I really couldn't do this without everybody. This is not a one-man show at all anymore. And when it was failing miserably. So, you know, it's one of those things. I really do, you know, I'm thankful for everybody's help. And I'm grateful for the audience that we've got. You know, the people that come back and they read and they comment and they, you know, send us emails and they write us letters and they send us stuff and, you know, give us recommendations for, you know, ideas and topics and stuff.
Much.
So hopefully all of you will be back with us next year. It's weird to say.
Isn't it? It's all, yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us. As always, you can connect with us on the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Tumblr, YouTube, Google+. And did I say Facebook? I said Facebook. And you can subscribe to our podcast over mm-hmm. on iTunes and Double Twist and OneCast. And always get your latest headlines over at the brand new Sci-Fi for Me 3.0, scififorme.com. And that's going to do it for us for this year. Timothy Harvey. As always.
Thank you, sir. Happy holidays.
You too. And happy holidays to all of you. And we will see you in January.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2014 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.